Welcome to First Reading, the Old Testament Lectionary Podcast for preachers, teachers, and curious readers of the Hebrew Bible. I'm Rosie Candlethal, Assistant Professor of Hebrew Bible in the Study of Religions at Wake Forest University.
And I am Paul Essa. I am a PhD student in Hebrew Bible at Yale University. Our co-hosts Rachel Rand and Tim McNinch are off this week, so Rosie, that puts you on the mic for this week. And this is for the 24th Sunday after Pentecost, November 3rd, 2024. And it looks like we have the book of Ruth, Ruth chapter 1, for the first reading. So where do you want to take us, Rosie?
Yeah, I was pretty thrilled when I saw Ruth on my list. I thought, oh, great. You know, like, this is such a great short story that preaches really well because it just grabs you by the heart, right? So the story centers a relationship between two women who are struggling to survive. They are at a certain point in the book, both widows who are clinging to one another for the cause of mutual survival, right? The story itself, in verse one, we read it's set in the time of Judges. And so it might be valuable to just kind of remind ourselves of what this period looked like in Israel's history. From what we can tell from the book of Judges, it's a period that's characterized by instability and violence. And it was a period of time when the tribes were loosely connected. So before the monarchy, before we had a standing army, this community is kind of loosely connected through tribes. And leadership is provided by charismatic military leaders who seem to rise up on occasion, right? And they campaign for support from their people, mostly by winning battles. And so, you know, what we really have is a society that's, you know, kind of contingent, shaped by its forces that are surrounding them and that are really shaped by the violence of the region at this time, right? And so we have this story of Ruth, this story of women that's set in this period before the monarchy. And it begins with a story of famine. So it begins with a story of hunger. And it's this hunger that forces a family of four from Bethlehem in Judah to then migrate for food. And so they're going to a neighboring land of Moab, so a land with which this land has also been engaged in various hostilities, right? So what is this not exactly the easiest move? So we can imagine that what's driving this family is real desperation,
is
economic.
Real desperation.
Right. Really desperate, right? So it's not an easy move to make. The irony in the text also is that there is no bread in Bethlehem, right? So that the house of bread does not have bread, right? And so we kind of hear that, that I don't know what's irony, but it's a painful one to know that the house of bread cannot feed the families that live there. So this is a story of a migrant community trying to, you know, just make their daily bread.
That's a really good sweep of background and a good contextual information right there. If I'm remembering correctly, I think we haven't met Ruth yet, the character of Ruth yet in the story. She comes in a little later after this family had initially migrated and settled in Moab. Is that correct?
That is excellent memory, Paul, right? So Ruth, as you said, only enters the story after this family from Bethlehem has settled in Moab. And Ruth is a Moabite. She's a local woman who marries into this foreign family from Bethlehem in Judah. And then we find tragedy striking again, right? So by verse five of this chapter, 10 years have passed. All the men in this family have died, leaving three women as widows. So Naomi and her daughter-in-laws, both Moabites, Orpah and Ruth. So we have this kind of mixed ethnicity family here. So Naomi at this point decides to return to her homeland in the hopes that she might be able to survive there. But she urges her daughters-in-law to return to their mother's house, right? So we don't hear mother's house very often. We hear father's house often in the Hebrew text. But here we have this kind of, there is something that Naomi is urging them, go back and see if you can find, you know, that relationship, that kind of maternal care at home here in Moab. And Naomi's reasoning is pretty practical. They're young enough to marry again and perhaps have a life beyond the one that they knew with her. And it's, you know, as Naomi is kind of thinking about how this family can survive, this is really why she's, you know, saying this. But yeah. Her daughters-in-law, initially, they both resist. They both do not want to leave. But the reality of life in the ancient Near East is important to kind of recognize here. The future is dire for a widow, right? And especially a widow without family support. So a widow that's living in a foreign land. And so there's a reason why we have the repeated litany in the Bible to care for the marginalized poor. And the litany goes the alien, the widow, and the orphan, right? Over and over again. So what we find is Ruth occupies two of those categories. She's both an alien and a widow in Moab. She does not wish the same fate for these two women, right? So if they were to come with her, it would just make their own situation even more fraught and more difficult. Yeah. Three widows, right? Kind of trying to make their way in another land.
That's a pretty sad scene to see how like this family is sandwiched in between hunger in Bethlehem and then later on hunger in Moab. And they are forced to, you know, more or less like remain in between. Versus also dealing with like ethnicity issues and various layers of cultural and social like alienation and exclusion at different levels. Yeah, I like that. Anything else you want to share about the story and these people?
Right. So I think one thing the text really does really well is the repetition of this word return, shuv, right? So has lots of meanings, but in this text, really that repetition of return, accompanied by the sound of weeping, right? So twice in verse 9 and in verse 14, we get the sense of the mutual pain and the desperation of these women. They really are kind of digging the bottom of the barrel to try to figure out what their options are. So for me, as I was reading this again, hearing this, you know, sense of loss and of the struggle to return, with the tears, it really struck me as kind of painting a wrenching scene of mutual loss, right? So Naomi's interpretation of events in her life is that God's hand has gone out against her. So in verse 13, that's how she sees how her fate has turned. She feels that she has no hope. And this is, you know, as I was reading this, not an uncommon reaction to crisis in our lives, right? I mean, in our last episode, we were just talking about Job chapter 42. Exactly. The immediate reaction is to say, you know, what have you done, Job, to have deserved this suffering? Yeah. Naomi also feels in some way that she, you know, God has put his hand out against her. He has abandoned her, or maybe worse, right? I don't know exactly what's in Naomi's mind, but often we spiral in moments of real tragedy, trying to figure out a reason why. And like Job, she doesn't get an answer, right? But Naomi is practical, and so she urges her daughters-in-law to stay in Moab among their own families. So in the story, Orpah eventually gives in. And, you know, no shade to Orpah. This was the practical decision, right? I mean, she was the one in this story that makes the sensible decision to stay in Moab and try to make something of her life. But of course, the narrative does no longer follows Orpah.
Yeah.
Ruth, the stubborn one. right? The one who insists on going. That's the one that the narrative will now continue with, right?
Yeah. And we see the way this whole theme and motif of alienation that followed Naomi and the family of Elimelech into Moab will now follow Ruth, a Moabite, into Judah, right? Again, and that's a really interesting narrative style, right? You know, on a more like a practical level, then Ruth is going to this new land that she did not grow up, she was not born in, to go now wrestle with alienation, right? Just because of her, like you said, stubbornness.
There's just sort of like, there is a certain stubbornness to her and the risk-taking that you're kind of pointing out here, right? Yeah. This is not the practical choice, right? The fact that she is going to uproot herself and travel with Naomi is you're encountering much more risk by doing that, right? So Ruth's promise not to leave in verses 16 to 17 lets paralleled with her steadfast resolve, her persistence, her determination. In the Hebrew is a hithpael participle there, so kind of a reflexive kind of deepening the sense to me as I was reading this that like that she just digs her heels in, right? So and at that point Naomi, it basically says she leaves her alone. She does not continue the conversation, right? So I don't know if Naomi gives her the silent treatment, but I mean, there's just a sense that both of these women are strong-willed in some way. And I get a glimpse into her character in the way the Hebrew narrative kind of goes at her. This is the first time we really hear this kind of personality thing with Ruth. And I found that really endearing as I was reading. That this is a quality to Ruth, that she is persistent and determined. In fact, Ruth then makes a solemn oath unto death, right? So she says, and I think I've forgotten this, let Yahweh do so to me and more also, if anything but death part you and me. I mean, that is about as serious as you can get, right? Like, let God do worse to me if there's anything that parts us besides death, right? So she is going to be buried with this woman. God help her, right? So so that, like, we're talking about Ruth makes this countercultural choice to join Naomi, to return with her on another desperate migration in a time of famine, and this time back to Judah. And our lectionary reading leaves us there. It leaves us on that note of promise from Ruth, and we don't get a resolution yet in this reading. Now, as the weeks follow on, we'll get more, because one of the kind of issues is that Ruth does resolve, you know, and I don't want to call it a happy ending, but something close to that. But what I really like is that there is something valuable in leaving the story unresolved this week.
I'm curious to know. Like, I don't want to interrupt the thought. I'm curious to know. Tell us, why is that?
Right. So the thing that I was noticing is that this lectionary reading is falling on November 3rd. So at least in the United States, our preaching context puts us right on the cusp of a presidential election cycle, a cycle in which I have noticed, and I'm sure our listeners have too, rhetoric against migrants, against asylum seekers, against aliens, strangers, widows, those who need support and help, you know, maybe from our federal government, that there's been a rhetoric against them that's been on the increase in these last months. And I imagine by November 3rd, it will, you know, have risen to a crescendo. And it strikes me as providential that in these 18 verses from Ruth chapter 1, we encounter the story of two migrants, right? Two migrants who are grieving death, who are mourning loss, who are hungry and helpless and vulnerable and feeling abandoned by God. And the second reading, sort of Psalm 146, also I felt was instructive here, right? So our psalm from this week's lectionary commands, don't put your trust in mortals, trust in God. But as I read Ruth with this text, I wonder what happens when it feels as though God's hand has gone out against you. Then who do you trust? You know, where do you put your trust? And this is how Naomi feels, right? I think many of us can empathize with that feeling, a feeling that there's nowhere to turn for help. Psalm 146, then in verse 9, repeats that the Lord, Yahweh, watches over the stranger, the alien, the ger, right? So, which is what Naomi and Ruth are. God upholds the orphan and the widow. So that's repeated in verse 9 of the psalm. So it brings me back then to Ruth, the Moabite's faithfulness, her human, her mortal faithfulness, right? Her steadfast resolve, her persistence and her refusal, her stubbornness to accept Naomi's no, that becomes the method for deliverance of these women. So, I mean, the deity, actually God, doesn't get referenced very much in this book. So that is quite interesting, right? So there really is pointing to the human resourcefulness that Ruth and Naomi scheme together in ways that then promote not only their own flourishing, but as we know, Ruth's name appears in the genealogy of Christ. So in the most unlikely of ways, right, here is this Moabite who then enters this sort of sacred family of Jesus, right? A bearer of like David's line and all the messianic promises that come with that. So I find that a really rich irony that we are reading this on November 3rd.
Yeah. It's sort of, if we put the Book of Ruth in conversation with everything going on in America right now, the Book of Ruth is offering a counter narrative and a counter rhetoric, right? Contrary to what we say and what we depict migrants to be in terms of their identity, who they are, and what they bring, right? As a gift or as like a threat, depending on who is talking. Mm-hmm. But what you are saying here is that the Book of Ruth is offering a different narrative, and the Book of Ruth allows us to imagine, migrants and people like her, an alien, marginalized woman in Judah, as more or less like the Shiro of the mm-hmm. passage, really, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And she's upholding a different identity, you know, basically traces herself into the lineage of the Messiah at the end of the chapter, as we see, right?
Right. And I think that's exactly right, right? There's a counter narrative here, right? So it is actually the foreigner's faithfulness, the foreigner's steadfastness, you know, in relationship to the chosen people, right? Which is so often the American narrative, right? That, you know, the kind of wonderful country that we are in, and that all foreigners want to join this country. But in reality, it's Ruth's gift, the foreigner's gift, that delivers both, right? And so I wonder if there isn't a preaching opportunity there to recognize the gift of the stranger, the gift of the alien, the gift of the widow, the gift of the vulnerable, the poor that exist in all of our churches, right? So in all of our communities, there are those who need, and we can resent that, or we can see this as potentially the avenue for which, you know, all of us then are saved through.
I like that.
Through that.
What a message to preach on November 3rd.
I hope I can hear it. Yes.
I hear it. I hear it, preachers. I hear it. Rosa, do you have a pit for us from here? Do you?
I think one nice thing is the lectionary kind of prevents us from going straight to the happy ending.
Okay.
So I'll say thank you, RCL. Often we are kind of wagging our finger and saying, oh, you left out, you know, but I think in this moment it serves us, you know, to kind of sit in the pain and to hear the promise that Ruth makes. And in verse 18, we don't get anything more than that, just the commitment to remain with Naomi, even if it means that they would die together and that would be all, you know, like that, to me really strikes me as something to remember, that when folks migrate here, when folks immigrate here, they are making a commitment to this community too, that they will die here in land that is not their own, alongside whoever considers themselves an American, right? So I found that to be just a gift this week, and that will help preachers avoid the pitfall of simply going to maybe the happy ending, right? We just kind of maybe need to sit in the discomfort and the unresolvedness of the story.
Yes, I like that. Thank you so much for your work. And preachers, when you think of migrants, right, you think of Ruth, you think of Naomi, you think of the family of Elimelech, and you think of the lineage of the Messiah even, right, that it's interspersed with migrants and alienation and foreignness and faithfulness and all these like really, great virtues, but also painful histories. And so when you think of it, when you think of migrants, think of these people, because they embody a different narrative than what we hear in the media here in America. Thank you so much, Rosie. Your work is amazing. Thank you for helping us this week with this really interesting passage, Ruth chapter 1.
You're very welcome.
Friends, we hope that you found something helpful in our discussion today. Remember that you can find an episode on nearly every passage in the lectionary by using the search box on our website, firstreadingpodcast.com. And while you are there, take a look at our merch or make a little donation to help us keep doing this amazing podcast work. And a big thank you to everyone who has already donated. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can click the little subscribe button there. If you found this helpful, leave us a review, leave us a comment, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Facebook, wherever you find us. And until next time, my name is Paul Essa.
And my name is Rosie Candethal. Have a great week, preachers.
Awesome.